We're ready to start. It's a pleasure this morning to welcome everybody. I apologize for the little inconvenience with the Zoom, but this was a worldwide issue from what I understand. Today's class is sponsored in memory of Sid and Ruth Cohen by their loving children, Steve and Gila, Brian, Susie and Mark, and grandchildren, Ruthie, Billy, Jacqueline, David, Olivia, and Rachel. So the Shema should have an Aliyah, and we should all have long life. Orit Avneri, we welcome her, Dr. Orit Avneri. And even though, as you'll hear, she was born in Israel, she's going to speak in English. It's a pleasure to welcome from Alon Shvut. She teaches Tanakh and is the head of academic writing and development at the Shalem Center, Shalem College in Yerushalayim. She's taught at Matan, at Pelech, at Midrashet Lindenbaum. She wrote a book on belongings and otherness in the books of Ruth and Esther. And it's a pleasure to welcome here this morning to teach Megillat Esther, the last of the Chamesh Megillot. Bakasha, Dr. Orit.
Thank you very much. If you want to practice your Hebrew, I can speak in Hebrew.
It's great, but it's not. No, we have to advertise Hebrew in advance. We will do Hebrew, but today Banglit.
It's okay. So I'll speak in English, and actually it will be, I think, very significant for the Shi'ur about Megillat Esther, because I really want to talk about the connection and the relationship between the Jewish in Israel and the Jewish in the diaspora. So I'm here from Alon Shvut, from Israel. I'm very Israeli, and I'm talking to you. You are somewhere in the other side of the ocean, right? And I think that it will be a very fruitful discussion. Even though I won't see the chat during my shiur, because I will be in the matzeget, in the PowerPoint. So at the end, some of you, one of you will collect the question, right? And tell me, what do you think that it's important to talk and to answer and to do something with that, okay? So I just want to share, and it's really a pleasure to be here with you. And please, 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 I want to apologize. If you hear that I'm not talking exactly like you want me to talk, right, in Hebrew, but I need... Okay, so now you see the PowerPoint. You all see the PowerPoint, right? Okay, so we'll talk about Megillat Esther. And I want to say that because Megillat Esther, first of all, because Megillat Esther is a late book, so whoever wrote it knew the stories and the books that was written before. So we can see in Megillat Esther a lot of echoes and dialogue and things that remind us other stories from the Tanakh, from the Bible. But I want to show you only one thing, and it will be important at the end. Okay, so I want to show you how Megillat Esther is talking with the stories about Shaul, the king, okay? Shaul HaMelech. I think that we all know it, but I want to show you. So first of all, now you see only the matzeget, or you see the matzeget with other pictures?
We see the one on the side. We see the main one, Esther, Perek Beit, Pasuk 5 or 2-5, and then okay, we see on the side. But so if you want to make it a little wider, bigger, that would be fine. Make it just a little bit bigger.
You see the two slides?
Right. I see a bigger one in the middle and a smaller one on the sort of upper left.
You can go into presentation mode to just see the main slide.
I know. That's exactly what I want to do. But for that, I think that I need to do stop share. Okay, just a moment. Just be patient and everything will be okay. Hopefully. Okay.
Today's our patient day. Today's the day everybody has to be patient.
Yeah.
Because it's always good. Sablanut.
Okay. Okay. Open. Just a moment. I promise you that everything will be okay. You should be doing it before because we had the problem. So I didn't do it before the class. Okay.
Okay.
Now I want to share screen. Here it is. Great. Now you see only the slide, right? Thank you. Okay, so that's the first thing that I want to show, that we have the main character in Megillat Esther, and that's of course Mordechai and Esther. And Mordechai is from Shaul's family, because we hear that Mordechai, son of Yair, son of Shimei, son of Kish, and Benjamin. Zot omeret, he is from Benjamin tribe, and from the same family, because we can see the Kish, right? Son of Yair, son of Shimei, son of Kish, and we know that Shaul's father is Kish. So the main characters are Mordechai and Esther, and they are from the family of Shaul. And the main enemy that they will stand against will be Haman. And Haman, son of Amdata, the Agagit, right? The Agagi. Now, when we hear the Agagi, it sounds like, okay, Agag, and that the king of Amalek. And when we hear Agag, the king of Amalek, and Shaul, that was the most important and dramatic moment when Shaul was a king, because Shaul failed in this mission. He didn't kill Agag, the king, and he took from the booty. So, and after the result of this failed was that Shmuel came and told him that he won't be a king anymore. So now, when we are reading Megillat Esther, we can hear the sound of history again. Right, we can hear the history coming again and again, because we have Mordechai and Esther that's standing in front of Haman, and we say, we can ask ourselves, what will happen now? Will Mordechai and Esther redeem and fix and do something better than Shaul when he fight against Amalek? Not only that, but when we hear that Esther will be a queen, we hear a very, very unique verse. And that's a verse about Vashti, after Ahasuerus decided that Vashti won't be anymore a queen because she didn't come, even though he asked her to come. I gave you the verse in Hebrew because we have to hear the words. The words are, "Umalchuta iten hamelech lir'uta hatova mimena." Okay, a better person, a better character, lir'uta hatova mimena, and that's the same phrase that we have when Shmuel told Shaul that his kingdom will go to a better person. קרא אדוני את ממלכות ישראל מעליך היום, ונתנה לרעך הטוב ממקה. So, now Esther from Shaul's family will be the better character, the better person, the better friend, לראותה הטובה ממנה, from the best, and she will try to redeem the family because Shaul wasn't the best, and it was David, right? David was Re'o Hatov Mimecha. So we can see that Esther actually trying to turn the things back and to fix and to redeem what happened to Shaul in the Amalek war. And not only, so now we'll see. Did it happen? Did it really happen? Did really Esther and Mordechai really did it? Really redeem their dynasty? So, as we said, Shaul didn't kill Agag Melech Amalek. You can see by itpos et Agag Melech Amalek chai. Okay? And he took from the booty. הוא חמל על מיטב הצון והבקר והמשנים. And in Megillat Esther, we will hear in chapter 9 that not only that Mordechai and Esther will kill Haman, בן המדתה האגגי, not only that, but they will kill the whole 10 children of Haman, עשרת בני Haman הרגו. The whole 10 children, and we will hear over and over again tonight, again and again and again, they didn't take from the booty. So Shaul, Mordechai and Esther are really, really trying to redeem their dynasty. And we can see that it's the same words like we already know from the dramatic moment of Shaul and Amalek. Maybe it can explain us that when Mordechai asked Esther to go to the king, to Ahasuerus, and to ask him to save the Jews, he told her, okay, someone else will save our nation. But he also said, "Ve'at uvet avich tovedu, you and your father's house will perish." And that's very strange. Why to say something about your own family? We are talking about the whole nation. But maybe if we understand that this story is also a very family story about the dynasty, about Shaul's dynasty, Mordechai tells Esther, it's the last minutes that you can do something to save our family, to save the story, the problematic story of Shaul, that he didn't kill Haman, Agag, and he took from the booty, and now you can do something about our family. Okay, so it's beautiful, but it's a very, very a family story. But we all understand that it's not only a family story. A family story will never be in the Bible. Like Megillat Ruth, it's not only a story about the Davidic line. It's also a very important story about many other issues. So the questions that I'm asking myself, and I want to ask us all here, is what is the main issue that Megillat Esther is talking about, except the things that they are trying to, it's a redemption story about Shaul's dynasty, that it's very good and very beautiful, but it's not, it can't be all. So to answer that, I want to say that I have another problem, because not only that it seems like a very, very family story, not only that, it's a very, very weird and strange and different story in the Bible. You all learn so many books in the Bible during the whole shiurim that was over this month. And you know that Megillat Esther is not like the other story. First of all, God is never mentioned here. He's not here in the Megillah. How can you tell a story and he will be in the Bible and God won't be here? It sounds very, very weird. Not only that, the names of the main characters Mordechai and Esther are not exactly Jewish names. Actually, their names are like the names of the Babylonian pantheon, Ishtar and Marduk. So we know those names, and it's a foreign names. So to talk about Mordechai and Esther with foreign names and without God in the story. And I want to add for that, that we have in the story a moment when Esther asked Mordechai to ask everyone not to eat and not to drink, right? Before she goes to the king. You remember Achashverosh told Esther, Mordechai told Esther that she must go to the king. And she said, after, of course, a long conversation, no, okay, I will go, but I want you and everyone to fast for 3 days. And she said, and fast in my behalf, do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. And that's very weird. I mean, it's okay not to eat and not to drink, but usually in the Bible, you have to add something to this fast, as we know from just one example, okay? From Yoel, okay? You have to fast and cry out to the Lord. You have to turning to God. We will be in Yom Kippur in about a month. And it's not only about not eating and not drinking. It's about praying. So where is the pray in what Esther asked the Jewish people to do? So we have no God, foreign names, no prayers, even in a very in a place that we expect a pray to be, no prayers. Not only that, right? It seems like for Esther to eat a kosher food is not an issue, okay? When Achashverosh took her and we read about her preparation to go to the king, we have a verse that she got everything and manotea. Her rations. She didn't ask for a kosher food. Now you will study Daniel tomorrow, I think. That's the next book in the Bible. And Daniel and Esther are very similar. Both Daniel and Esther were taken to the king. They were a Jewish people, characters, and they had Jewish name and Babylonian or Persian and name, and they had to be very beautiful. And in Daniel, he also had to be very smart because he's a boy. Okay, the girls just must be beautiful, but Daniel also must be very clever and very smart, and also. In both story, we hear that someone gave them things to eat. Esther, it seems like she ate it. But in Daniel, he asked the man who gave him the food that he won't eat it. Because he said, I can't eat. It's not a kosher food. Okay, I will only drink water and eat legumes. Okay, because I can't eat the food that you can bring me. Okay, so we have no kosher food, no God, no prayers. And if it's not enough, if I ask to myself, where is Megillat Esther in our history? So it's probably Xerxes the one, okay? Hashiyahu. That's Achashverosh. And you can see that it's years after Cyrus' declaration and after the founding of Second Temple and construction of Second Temple. So there is people in Jerusalem and in the land of Israel. So why we can find people in Shushan? Take your luggage and go to make Aliyah, go to Jerusalem. Why are you staying in Shushan? And not only that, Jerusalem and Eretz Israel is never mentioned in Megillat Esther. Okay, you are sitting in Shushan, but something happened. Write letters to the people in Jerusalem, ask them what to do. What do you think? Or what shall we do? Maybe at the end of the story, you will go to live with them. But Jerusalem and Yerushalayim never mentioned, no prayer, no God, etc., etc. So why to give us such a story and to bring it to the Bible and to say it's part of our Tanakh? Okay, it's part, yeah, we want to hear this story. So that's what I want to find out in this shiur. And as I said in the opening words, I think that it's very significant that I'm from near Jerusalem, are giving this shiur to you. And it will be very interesting to hear the different voices that we can find in Megillat Esther. So that's what I want to answer. And to answer that, I want first of all to look on chapter one. When I read chapter one in Megillat Esther, and of course we won't read the whole Megillah, but I want to ask something about chapter one. Why do I need chapter one? Chapter one is talking the story of Vashti. Why is it so important? Why not to say that the king is looking for a queen and then Esther came and became a queen? Why do I need such a long perek and to talk about Vashti? So if we will read carefully chapter one, we can see that the story of Vashti echoes and remind us the story of Mordechai in chapter 3. What happened to Vashti, the whole woman, and Achashverosh, is exactly what happened to Mordechai, the whole Jews, and Haman. Let's see it. Both of them refused to the king's command, right? Achashverosh asked Vashti to come, and she said no. And Mordechai knew that Achashverosh said that everyone should kneel to Haman, and he didn't do it. We don't know the reason why they refused to do that. We don't know why Vashti didn't come. We can assume, but we don't know. And we also don't know why Mordechai did it. I know that you want to say, no, it's written because he was a Jew. But it's not a good answer, because we never heard that a Jew cannot kneel or bow low in front of someone. The whole Bible is talking about people who did it. And of course, the rabbinic literature is talking about people who did it. So we don't actually know why Mordechai didn't do it. And by the way, we can find in the rabbinic literature a lot of answers to this question, because they also read this story and didn't understand why Mordechai didn't do it. So we don't know. In both cases, we have anger. And in both cases, some personal issues, okay, between Achashverosh and Vashti, and between Haman and Mordechai, became a story for the whole group. Okay, the whole woman in Vashti's story and the whole Jews in Mordechai's story. And we can see, you can see that it's the same word. In Vashti, we hear, כי על כל השרים ועל כל העמים אשר בכל מדינות המלך אחשוורוש, the whole empire and the whole woman must pay for this this action of Vashti. And in Mordechai, we also hear ישנו עם אחד מפוזר ומפורד בין העמים, בכל מדינות מלכותיך, ודתיהם שונות מכל עם, ודתי המלך אינם עושים. So it's something about the whole nation. Okay, and that's in both cases. In both cases, we have the root booz, and that's interesting. And in both cases, letters are written and sent all over the kingdom. And in both stories, episodes, the individual receive a separate punishment than the whole group. Okay, Vashti will banished from her husband, and the whole woman should show respect to their husband. And Haman wants to kill Mordechai immediately, but he wants to kill the whole Jews in about some month, right? It's not the same punishment. So why it's so important to me? Because this what we saw now is emphasized that we should read what happened to the woman and understand that that's exactly what happened to the Jews. Okay, because Esther 1 describes a social hierarchy in which those on the lower ranks are vulnerable to real and present danger from those above them, and that's exactly what will happen to the exiled Jewish people. Okay, they will be exactly like the woman, and that makes me think that we should read what happened to the woman, to Esther, and to understand that it's reflect and mirror and tell me what happened to the Jews. So we will read what happened to Esther, and we will understand what the Megillah wants to tell us about the whole community. Now, it's very good because Esther is not only a woman and not only a Jewish woman, she's really the other, because she is an orphaned, an exiled woman. Okay, it's not only one thing, but the whole package. Her mother and father died, and she is in a family of exiled community, and she's not belonging to anyone. Mordechai adopted her, okay, as his own daughter. So we have Esther, that she is the other, and we want to ask and to see and to follow what happened to her as a Jewish and a woman. Okay, so let's see what happened to her. I want to be, first of all, on chapter 2. Okay, in chapter 2, we heard that Esther was taken to the king, and what happened to her during this few, I don't know, month or years or days that she was there. Now, I can read this chapter in two options, okay? One option that I want to show you is that this text paints Esther as a helpless figure. Yeah, in a very, very threatened world. Okay, she's an object, and she always taken. Mordechai is taken her, and Achashverosh was taken her, and then of course he will take Esther was taken to King Achashverosh again, and everyone loved her. She is an object that everyone looks on her, and she is mute, like you are muted now, and she is very, very passive, and you want to see how passive she is. See, she is not talking. Esther did not reveal her people or her kindred, for Mordechai had told her not to reveal it. Ki Mordechai tzivah, she does exactly what the man told her to do, right? She is very obeying character. Not only that, we have a very dramatic moment that each of those girls who was taken can ask whatever she wants for one night to go to the king, because it was a very important night. If the king will love her, she will be the queen. But if the king won't love her, it's not that she is coming, she is going back home. She will stay forever at the harem, and she will be a number. And the Ahasuerus can ask her to come again or not to ask her to come, never ever. She is in a prison. So she can ask whatever she wants to come to this such an important night for her. So surprising that Estelle, let's see it here, let's read it, because you won't believe me that it's really happened if I'll just tell you. When the turn come for Estelle, daughter of Avichail, the uncle of Mordechai, who had adopted her as his own daughter, to go to the king, see how she is a woman of men's, right? Her father, Mordechai, the king, she never stays alone. She can't. She is very, very a passive woman. Now, hear it. She did not ask for anything. But what a guy advised. Okay? It seems like Estelle has no will. She never heard that she can ask for something, that she can want something. She didn't ask for anything. So when we read it, the whole chapter, we understand that we are talking about a very, very passive and muted and an object woman. So that's a very good option to read it. I think that we can see it here. But maybe I can offer you another reading. Maybe. Okay. When I read Estelle 2, chapter 2, I see a very, very sophisticated woman who knows exactly what the world expects her to do. And she said, okay, you want me to be a passive and a woman that doesn't know what she wants. Okay, that's exactly what I will do. Why? Because I won't be just a number in the harem. If you took me here, I want to reach to the highest point that I can think about. I will be the queen. I will do everything that I can to be a queen, because I don't want and I can't be something less than the highest things that that the world can offer me. So Estelle is very clever, and she tried to be the queen, and she knows exactly what to do to be a queen. When she did not ask for anything, but what a guy advised, it's very, very clever thinking, because she thought to herself, what a woman from a village, from the country, from the mountains, really knows about what Ahasuerus wants. I can't think about it. But a guy who every night brings someone to Ahasuerus, and in the morning brings her back, he surely knows what Ahasuerus likes. And he likes me, the guy, so he will be on my side. So he will tell me what to do to become a queen. So when I read chapter 2, I'm not really know, and I think it's very important, because we can read it in both alternatives. It can be a very passive and muted woman, and it can be a very strong and clever woman who knows exactly what to do. Okay, now I want to jump to the main scene, the main episode of Esther and Ahasuerus. But before that, I wonder, what do you think over what length of time that the Book of Esther occur? Think for a moment. A month, a year, 2 years, 3 weeks, 30 years. Okay, let's see together, because it's very important for us. So we open Megillat Esther Bishnat Shalosh Lemalcho, okay, in the third year of his reign. Okay, that's the first date that we have, Shnat Shalosh Lemalcho. Then we have in the seventh year of his reign, and that's in chapter 2, and that's when Esther became a queen. So 4 years Ahasuerus was looking for a queen from the third year till the seventh year of his reign. Okay. Then we have the story of Ahasuerus, of Haman and Mordechai. But Mordechai would not kneel or bow low, and Haman was very angry, and he cast the lot. And then we have the date when he did it, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus. Bishnat 12. So we have in the third year, in the seventh year, and then in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus. Bishnat 12 l'melech Ahasuerus. And that's where everything is happening about the lot, and Esther will go to Ahasuerus. So why it's so important for me? Because I want us to understand that when Mordechai asked Esther to go to Ahasuerus, it was after 5 years that Esther was a queen. It's not that yesterday she became a queen. 5 years that she is getting up every morning and there are servants and people who did whatever she wants and feed her. 5 years that she is in the palace, that she is a queen. Now maybe we can understand why she said, I won't go to Ahasuerus. I mean, I am a queen. I'm not your servant. I'm not even your daughter that you adopted. I am a queen for 5 years. It's a lot. And with this understanding, I want us to see what happened between Esther and Ahasuerus in their meeting. So first of all, when Esther came to the king, there is a very interesting verse that opening this scene. And I want you to hear it in Hebrew, because in the translation, it got lost. It's a very, very royal verse. Here, ויהי ביום השלישי ותלבש אסתר מלכות, ותעמוד בחצר בית המלך הפנימית, נוכח בית המלך, והמלך יושב על כיסא מלכותו, בבית המלכות, נוכח פתח הבית. You can hear that we are talking about a king and a royalty. And we ask ourselves whether Esther will be a queen, how royalty will she be, how malchutit she will be, or will she play another role? Now, Mordechai asked Esther to go to the king and to cry and to beg and to say, please, please, please save my people. But Esther will do something else. And we will ask whether it's something more royalty or is it something else? Okay, so let's see in chapter 5 what happened. Esther came to Ahasuerus and she asked, if it please your majesty, Let your majesty and the man come today to the feast that I have prepared for him. So why did she ask him to come to the feast that she prepared? One option is to say that as a passive and submissive woman, as we told that we saw in chapter 2, she lacked the wherewithal to stand before the king and reveal her identity, following this revelation with a dramatic request. I am a Jew, you have to save me. She can't do it. All she could do was ask for a small favor. The king could not respond, reasonably refuse. Okay, she knows that the king loves wine. So she said, I will ask him a very, very small, a tiny thing. Just come to drink with me. And he will say, okay, I can't say anything more. And I have to practice how I'm standing in front of Ahasuerus and how I hear my voice and how I asking something. And that's exactly what she did. She asked him a very, very small favor to come to the feast that she prepared. Now, the king is not stupid, and he understood that that's not the big question, because no woman or queen will rescue herself just to ask him to come to drink wine with him. So in the feast, he asked her, okay, what is your wish? I know it's not to come here. What is your really wish? And he said, it shall be granted you. And what is your request, etc., etc. It shall be fulfilled. I will do everything you want. And now Esther can ask the big question, and let's hear what she did. Okay. My wish, replied Esther. My request. If your majesty will do me the favor, if it please your majesty to grant my wish and accede to my request, let your majesty and the man come to the feast which I will prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do your majesty bidding. Okay, we all can hear, I think, the stuttering. And she's stuttering. She is not telling the request. She's starting, if it's okay. Yeah, I told you it's okay. Ask what you want. And if you'll do tomorrow I'll do whatever you want. And the question, of course, is why she is stuttering. Why she is not asking? And I want to offer you again that she acts very, very slowly and hesitantly to try to be the woman that can ask the big request. Okay, so she is like in a dress rehearsal. She said, okay, I'm standing in front of Ahasuerus and the man, and I have to ask the question, how am I doing that? And she's trying and trying and trying. So that's a very good option to see what happened in the first banquet, in the first feast that she asked Ahasuerus and the man to come. But of course, you can sit in your home and say, oh, I understand it completely different. I can hear the stuttering. I can hear it. But that it's not because she is afraid and not because she's trying to say something and it didn't work, so she said, okay, tomorrow. It's because she's very sophisticated and clever woman. And she said to herself, okay, if I'll do what Mordechai asked me to do, to go and cry and say to Ahasuerus, oh, you don't know what happened, you have to help me, he will look at me and say, why are you crying? It's so, you're not beautiful with all these tears and your makeup. Go away and I want another queen. That won't work. Because Amani is very, very strong character in this play. So Esther, because she understands what is happening, she is trying to get Ahasuerus getting suspicious about what is happening. Why Esther is coming and asked me to come? And then when I told her, tell me what you want, she said, oh, I'm trying, but it's so hard tomorrow. What happening here? And in the same time that Ahasuerus will become very suspicious about what happened, Haman will be arrogant because he will think to himself, oh, such a beautiful thing. She wants me, and tomorrow also she wants me to come. And that's how she can fall asleep is suspicious. Okay, because she wants Haman to be unaware to what she is preparing to him, and she wants Ahasuerus to be very nervous that he understands that something is happening. So those two options are here in chapter 5. I cannot decide which option is better. It can be that she is very afraid, and it can be that she is very clever and sophisticated. You can decide what you want, but those two options are here. Now, if it's the second option, I just want to say that she really succeed because Ahasuerus didn't sleep the whole night, right? He was thinking to himself, what is happening? Give me the memorial book. I want to see what happened here. I want to see what Esther is trying to tell me. Anyhow, Esther never know what happened to Ahasuerus during the night, and we are in the second feast. Now, the king is after a night without sleeping, and he really wants to know the answer. And he asked her, what is your wish, Queen Esther? Tell me. Okay, you didn't tell it yesterday. Please tell me today. And let's hear what Esther told him. So here we are. If your majesty will do me the favor, and if it is pleases your majesty, let my life be granted me as my wish and my people as my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, massacred, and exterminated. Had we only been sold as bondmen and bondwomen, I would have kept silent, for the adversary is not worthy of the king's trouble. Okay, great. She asked the question, but she asked the request. But look, she didn't say her identity, and not herself or the Jews, right? She didn't say anything about the annihilation. And she didn't even say that the Jews are loyal Persian citizens. She rather links the nation with her own fate, asking that they be delivered by virtue of her personal connection with the king on the one hand and the Jewish community on the other. Right? She didn't say that they have name, that we are the Jewish people, we want to live. No, we don't need to live in freedom. We can be slaves, it's okay. Just don't kill us. That's a problem. So it seems like Esther looks herself and her people as the other, that our life is not really matter. I just don't want us to be killed, but everything else is okay. And our name is not so important, and our identity, just don't kill us. And not only that, I didn't bring you what happened next, but in the next chapter, in chapter 8, Esther brings Mordechai to the palace. And she said, okay, Mordechai will do whatever we need. And Mordechai becomes a strong character. He will act in the public sphere. He will go out. He will be the most important person. And Esther will stay in the palace and won't say any other words. So it seems like in the first option, in chapter 2, and it's after, in chapter 5, and even in chapter 7, that Esther sees herself as the passive, other, muted woman. And she only acted when it really was needed. But in the moment that she can, she moves back and brings Mordechai to the center, to the front of the stage. That, of course, one good option to read it. Maybe you want to read it in the second options, like we read in chapter 2 and in chapter 5. And here in chapter 7, you hear it and you say, what a clever queen. She understood that she won't be able to do anything if her man is there. So the only thing that matters, it's not the name of the nation and not what happened to them, but really not bothering the king. The only thing that bothering the king is something very personal. And she tried to say something about Haman. And really Ahasuerus, see, he asked her, who is he and where is he? Mi hu ze ve eize hu? He didn't ask, wow, are you a Jew? Or what nation are you talking about? I didn't hear it. He just wants to hear the name of this man, this character, this figure that he thinks that he is the bad guy, that that he should act and do something about that. So Esther is very clever. She understood that she has to play the game and to move Haman, and she really did it. And only after Haman is not here any longer, she can go to the king and ask for her nation, for her people. And that's exactly what happened in chapter 8 in Megillat Esther, but I didn't bring you. Okay, so we had two options during the whole Megillah. And I remind you that we are following Esther because we want to understand something about the Jewish people, right? Okay, and now I want to be in the last chapter. And that's really, really important because we have chapter with three verses that you can read, okay? And those two verses are talking about Ahasuerus and Mordechai. So the conclusion, okay, of the Megillah, chapter 10, confirms the atmosphere that has was in chapter 1, right? It's the same atmosphere of men who act. And I can even say that the couple who living happily ever after is not Esther and Ahasuerus, it's Ahasuerus and Mordechai. Right? And the Esther is excluded from the story. The couple earning this fairy tale ending being Ahasuerus and Mordechai. And we have the king, we have the tokef, the gvura, and the annals, okay, the books that it's so important. That's what we have here, and we have mass, of course, mass al kol haaretz. So we have a very, very strong ending to this story that Esther is not here at all. And we ask ourselves, where is Esther? She, not only that she is not in the end, we don't even know that she was a mother, that she did what, okay, a woman can do in the Bible. She can have children. We don't know that she had children. We don't know that she is she has a dynasty. Nothing happened to her. She was a prison a prisoner in the palace, and she never came out from this palace. And Ahasuerus and Mordechai really was the important people in this kingdom and in this book, in this story. Now, if I want to think about the Jewish people, I can say, okay, if that's what happened to Esther, I can understand that the story tries to tell me that the Jewish people will always, always be the other. Like Esther, the woman, always be the other. Maybe they can, you know, they can have a little success, like Esther, that she came in front of the king and she talks and she did something, but in a minute she went back and she was not important at the end of the Megillah. That's exactly how the Jewish people in the diaspora, in exiled, are living. They are the other. They are in the marginal of the society, and they are always, always fear that something will happen to them. There always someone like Haman can come and try to kill them. And they're trying to do the best, but it never will be, they will never feel at home. They will never feel secure because they're always afraid that someone will come, like in chapter 8 to Vashti, and like the whole Megillah to the Jewish people, and like in the end to Esther, someone will come and say, okay, you are not important, go back. And maybe they will even kill them. Okay, so that's a very strong feeling about the book of Esther and about what happened to Esther. But it's not the whole story because I didn't read it with you, but before chapter 10, we have chapter 9. And in chapter 9, we see Esther writing letters. Mordechai wrote letters, and then Mordechai and Esther wrote letters. And then in the end, it's even only Esther who wrote the letter. Okay? She wrote a second letter of Purim. So when we read this chapter, we can say to ourselves, okay, it's not exactly what you said before, that Esther is not important for the story and it's only about Mordechai and Ahasuerus. And like Esther is the Jewish people, that they will always be afraid of something. No, see, Esther really very important, and she can act and she can do things, and it seems like she really knows how to play the game. She knows what to do, and exactly like that are the Jewish people who are trying to be part of the society, part of the community surrounding them, and they know exactly what to do. And they can reach and be the queen, and they can reach and be Mordechai, who are helping the king, and they know how to deal with those things, and they can stay and feel safety and can do things and be part of the lands that they are living in. If I want to make it even stronger, I want to show you something. Megillat Esther, the main story of Megillat Esther, okay, the story of going to Ahasuerus, is happening during the month of Nisan. We can read in the first month, that is the month of Nisan, that when Haman cut the lot, he pil pur, Be'alef Benisan. And then on the 13th days of the first month, זאת אומרת, ב-13 יום בו, בגימל בניסן, המן send the letters. And then Mordechai asked Esther to go to the king, and Esther asked him, do not eat or drink for 3 days. And on the third day, Esther stood in the inner court of the king's palace. So we are in Yud Gimel, Yud Daled, Tetvav, Benisan. Or Yud Daled, Tetvav, Tetzayin, Benisan. And we all know this date, the 15th of Nisan. That's a very, very familiar holiday. And it's Pesach. It's even the most important holidays that we have. It's the celebration of the nation. And Megillat Esther is happening in the same dates. And Megillat Esther never mentioned that it's happened in Pesach. Now, it's not only that the dates, but Megillat Esther really echoes the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. And Esther echoes Moses. Think about all the equal things that we have between Esther and Moshe, between Esther and Moses. We have both of them adopted in a foreign king, right? And they save the Israelites. And there is a holiday because of this story. So if we think about it, Megillat Esther is an alternative story to Yetziat Mitzrayim. In the same dates, and Megillat Esther is telling us, you know what? We don't have to go out from Parshian, from Shushan, and to go to the land of Israel. We can stay. And we can success, and we can live, and we can do wonderful things. We don't have to go to the land of Israel. It's an alternative story to Yetziat Mitzrayim, to go to Eretz Israel, to go to the promised land in the same dates. Now, so we have two options to read Megillat Esther. Right? One option to see Esther as a woman that during the whole story, till the end, till chapter 10, it's a story about a woman that cannot break the boundaries, cannot change the society. She will ever stay the woman, the other, and that's exactly what will happen to the Jewish people. You have no future in Shushan. You cannot live there. You will always be the other, even if you have one story that you really did it, but you will always be so frightened, so threatened from other people, and you will always be in other land, in other government. It's not your government, but you can read the same Megillat Esther in a completely different version, and to say, wow, what a story. It's a story about a woman that did things that breaks the whole boundaries, that really became a very, very influenced character. And that's exactly what we as a Jew can do. We can be very, very influenced, and we can do things, and we can feel at home, and we can stay here, and we can say a story that it's alternative to Yetziat Mitzrayim. Now, this duality is very important, and I want to say, I know that I have to finish and I want to hear your question. I want to say something about bringing this story to the Tanakh. The whole Tanakh is talking about Eretz Israel. The orientation is about Eretz Israel. You should go to Eretz Israel. You should stay in Eretz Israel. It's not good to go out. If you won't behave properly, you will exiled from the land of Israel. And you always think about the land of Israel. But think since Galut Bavel, the Babylonian exile, we know that till now, we always have Jews not in Israel, even though they can come to Israel, they are not coming to Israel. If we won't have a story in our Bible, in our Tanakh, that will tell their story, that will give them a voice, that will tell about their challenges, their fears, their destiny, their success, their dreams, everything. What do you want from your life? The Bible, the Tanakh won't be shalem, because it will be a story only about the people who live in Israel or want to come to Israel or will come to Israel. But what will we do with all those people who won't come to Israel but want to feel Yehudim, really Jewish, and that the Tanakh is part of their story? So I think that the whoever think to bring Megillat Esther to the Tanakh was so clever and so brave. And he said, you know what? I am Orit Avneri in Alon Shvut, wants to hear you in Canada, in New York. I want to hear you. I want to hear about your identity. I want to hear about your challenges. I want to hear about it. It's part of my story as a Jewish nation. And I think that I can learn from you about Jewish identity. And I want you to hear me, like in the Tanakh, we can hear other stories. You can hear other stories about Eretz Yisrael and to learn from them. So Megillat Esther is not, it's a very dialectic Megillah, because I think that be a Jew not in Israel is very dialectic. We are part of the country, but we are not part of the country. We have a Jewish name, but we have a name that's part of our other communities that we are related to. We have two languages, right? We can talk in Hebrew, but we are talking in English. And all those duality is in Megillat Esther, that have two characters, and that Esther has two names, Esther and Hadassah, and that are talking in two voices during the whole story. We have two voices. Should we be here or not? Should we stay here or not? We want to tell a story about staying, but we also know that we have a story that it's not exactly our place. It's not that exactly we feel here at home. So for me, as an Israeli woman who has no two languages, only one, it was a very, very challenging shiur, but I hope that you understood something, okay, from the shiur, and I can hear your questions. I just want to bring you back to my screen. Okay.
Back. Thank you. Do you want me to briefly go over some of the questions with you? I can read them for you if you prefer.
Thank you.
I'll quickly ask. Okay, so just the first question, I'll try to go in order more or less. Reyut, what you had to mean, Liruta HaTovimena, Reyut means a friend, Ravta L'Reyecha Kamocha, I assume, but in the Megillah, it doesn't really mean a friend. It means someone to replace them.
Right.
Okay, all right. Somebody was asking about David and Shaul. Basically, Shaul wouldn't kill when he should kill. And perhaps David, you could say, I mean, it doesn't sound right, but David, you know, sent people to their death, etc., that contrast. And maybe that's why his Malchut didn't last. There's sort of, David went to the other extreme.
Okay, I just want to say something about that, okay? First of all, thank you to remind me about Shaul, because exactly like I think that Megillat Esther is telling the story about the Jewish people who lives outside the land of Israel, it's very connecting to the story of Shaul. Megillat Esther is telling the story about the king who was rejecting from being a king, okay? But he also deserved a story. So Megillat Esther is connecting to Shaul because she really wants to redeem the story of Shaul. And I think that if we had a time, but we don't have, we can see that the story of David in the cave, that he almost killed Shaul, but he didn't, is in dialogue with this story. Because if you remember, David cut את המעיל של שאול, right? And he show Shaul and he said to him, I could kill you, but I didn't. So that's a moment that Shaul really saw the man who is better than him. Okay, that was the Re'ah Tov Mimeno. Okay.
Okay, Daniel and Esther both in the court. Okay, somebody asked, why didn't the Megillah directly state that Mordechai comes from Sheva Binyamin? Because you know you can interpret it, and it's not necessarily the same Kish, and even the same thing with Haman. Hagagit may not be. So it's an allusion to it, but why not say it directly?
First of all, because that's literature, right? It's about literature, but I think that the Ishi Mini, it's really Mishavet Binyamin. It's not allusion, it is Shevet Binyamin. Okay, that's how we call Ish Yemini, Shevet Binyamin. Okay, so he is from Shevet Binyamin, and we have some clues that it's from the same mishpacha, from the same family. Yeah.
Okay, maybe Esther learned in the 5 years. I'll paraphrase the question. From year 7 to 12, the royal politics. Maybe she started the very passive, everything done, yeah. And then she could. It's not. To reading, it's moving from one to the other, perhaps. Okay, yeah, maybe that's why it took the 5 years. Yeah, a few people want to know, by the way, where you got the pictures. If it's from one Megillah edition, or you put them together from
all over.
You worked hard. You worked hard. Okay, yeah. Let's see, what else do we have here? Right, is the king stupid or smart? Right, that's, I know, a big question. Ahasuerus, is he a drunken idiot, or is he a really shrewd manipulator? Right. Of course, you can read it both ways. I would
have. It's machloket, but I want to say, before we had Trump, I can say that I cannot assume that a king that have such a big empire will be stupid. But now today, I'm not really sure. Okay, we can have someone that is not so clever and is the manhig of the whole Western world. Yeah. So
Hamevin Yavin. Okay, somebody pointing out that, of course, being a nobody, not really like talking for perhaps what you're saying at the end, that these nobodies can make a pivotal role in history. You know, Esther comes from nothing, and women and Jews at all, and then the same way from the personal to the national, Jews can make. It's a portrait of the Jew. Megillah is a portrait of the Jew in exile. Well, that's what's sort of at the end. It's not only a portrait, but beautifully how you explain Tanakh wants to include the Jew of the exile. It's interesting because I've heard people say it's a critique, of course, of Jews in the exile. And you're saying it in the opposite way. No, it could be both at the same time.
Yeah, I can tell you a small story that once I gave this lecture, not this lecture, but I gave a lecture about Megillat Esther in front of a group that were scholars from Israel and from North America. And when I finished the Arza'a, the lecture, one of the Israel scholar raised his hand and said, beautiful lecture, but I think that what you said about the option that they can stay in Shushan, it can't be. It's not, you didn't read as you should. And then a scholar from North America raised his hand and he said, what you said about going to Israel and make Aliyah, it's not really what is written in the Megillah. So I said, you see, it's all in our head. And I think that the Megillah is telling both sides. It's very complex Megillah. We usually think that it's critique. But okay, there is a very strong voice of critique and saying, what are you doing there? Okay, now you had Esther, but who will be there next year or in German, in you know. But I think that the Megillah is strong because she gave a very, very good voice to the people in Shushan to say, you know what? We have a good life. We are the queen. We are in the palace and we can do it. And you all, the people in Jerusalem, you depend on us. If we weren't there, Haman could kill all of you. But we were there to save you, the people in Jerusalem.
Somebody asked an interesting question. Again, I know Yoni Grossman, I think, addresses this a little bit. Why is the Megillah not called Megillat Mordechai?
It's all about Esther. It's not about Mordechai.
Okay, sometimes I give my editor a comment. I'm forwarding the question. Okay, that's ties to Esther and Shaul contrast with Ruth and David.
Okay. Yes, so you probably know that I think that Megillat Esther is in dialogue with Megillat Ruth about those two voices. And I wrote about my PhD on that and my book on that and some articles about that, even in English.
You can summarize in 1 minute, because I think most of us don't know that you think the books are
okay,
in
this. Okay, so first of all, I can send you the article in English if you want. And I really think that it's two sides of the same coin. Okay, to say in Megillat Ruth, we are the majority in our land and we have a foreign woman who is trying to come to our home and we are very afraid what will happen to our identity. And in Megillat Esther, we are the woman, the minority in a land that it's not our land, and we are knocking on the door to be part of the society, and we are very afraid what will happen to our identity. And this dialogue between Ruth and Esther is very important because we are talking about identity, the Jewish identity, once we are majority and when we are minorities. And to read those two books together give us the whole picture about our challenges as Jewish people. Okay, and you can read it.
Very nice. That's why, because the other day, Miriam Krug was talking how the Chamesh Megillot, even the idea that the Megillot are connected to each other is really a medieval idea. You don't find that earlier in the sources. Right. There's nowhere in the Gemara that they're Chamesh Megillot. 24 books of Tanakh. But now, you know, we see a lot where people want to connect the Chamesh Megillot. Yeah, okay, right. I think we covered most of the questions. People can actually unmute themselves if you like. It's getting a little late. I know we started a couple minutes. I appreciate your show, everybody. I'm back, sorry for the technical Zoom problems they were having, but really, thank you very much. As you see on the bottom, if you can't see the comments, you have to send all the people who find your share very interesting, inspiring, different, you know, Megillah Ruth. Everybody knows the story of Esther. It's one of the most favorite, you know, books of Tanakh for everybody. So it's always nice, you know, new insights, new thing, yeshikot. Mm-hmm.